This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Youth Baseball Talk. Only on lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, Jim Cromer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Youth Baseball Talk, powered by The Rope Trainer. As John Smoltz says, everyone should have one, from big leaguers to little leaguers. Make sure you check it out at theropetrainer.com, the greatest throwing tool that you will find on the market today. I'd like to welcome everybody in on this edition this week as we say goodbye to the 2016 baseball season. We had an exciting World Series that I'm sure fathers, sons, families, moms, daughters, everybody involved watched with amazement at some of the things that went on. Some great play, some interesting decisions made by managers, and at the end, I think it was right. I think the best team won. So that doesn't always happen, of course, but obviously the Cubs had a great season, and for them to finish it out, especially down 3-1, I think they showed what they were made of with some of their players and their capabilities. And overall, it was a tremendous series. So from a fan's point of view, I don't know how much more you could ask for, except for, obviously, if you're a diehard fan, your own team to have been there. But since that's not the case, we have to look at the World Series as just a baseball fan. And then I think it's always interesting, too, to look at some of the things that went on and see how it applies to us as both, not fans, but as both parents, coaches, if you're a player, those types of things, what you take away from big-time events like the World Series. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about it today because it's, you know, the games have only been over here for, 2 days. I've received a lot of messages from people because of some things that went on that kind of contradict some things occasionally that we talk about on here, and I had some look there, looky there, look at what's going on there, that kind of stuff went on. So I want to address a few of those things and make sure that people understand where we're coming from here on a few things, number one, and then just talk in generalities about some of the stuff that went on. Before we do that, I want to make sure I remind you to check out youthbaseballtalk.com. It is our website that houses the podcast. Of course, you can catch up on back episodes. We've had some of the most amazing guests on the show since its inception, and you can go back as far as the very first episode and hear from some just tremendous people. Twitter is where we do a lot of our social media engagements with people and see what's going on, see which topics are out there that need to be discussed. At Podcast Baseball is where you'll find us there. And, of course, Facebook.com/YouthBaseballTalk is always a great way for us to interact with people. And the emails, they just keep coming, and I do love them, so keep them coming. Info@YouthBaseballTalk.com is the email that you can find me at. And, of course, I ask everybody to just subscribe to the show, and that way you'll get a notification each time the show has been released. It's very easy to do. You can go to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, any of those major podcast outlets. You know, just search for us, Youth Baseball Talk, and when you find us, you just click the subscribe button. It is free, and of course, with settings, it allows you to get a notification saying, hey, the new show's out. Appreciate that so very much. Of course, like I said, I can't help but think about some of the things that went on in the World Series from a coach's point of view, from a parent's point of view, and looking at it through the eyes of a win-at-all-cost situation and things like that, and then to realize and know that I was going to get some emails immediately about the amount of pitching that went on by certain guys in the series because we talk so much about things that you just don't see. So naturally, of course, and again, I don't necessarily take issue with people for not agreeing with us or whatever. I'm completely fine with it. I've said it once, I'll say it again. This show is a forum, basically, for information, and we don't do any good just ignoring things or sweeping them under the rug or being so defiant about things. The only way to bring about positive change is to talk about it and to become educated as well. So by doing that, sometimes, you know, we say things and we do things that people are always looking for any example to go against that grain. Well, this World Series was an obvious example of going against that grain. What we saw was a lot of guys throwing on limited rest, things that you never see, And of course, that win at all costs mentality of everybody's available at any given time is always something that I think you'll find. Now, the first thing I want to say is, please remember this. When you make it to the highest level and you get paid, the reality there is your job is to win. And if an organization decides to measure your health against winning, I think that's a decision that everybody understands and obviously the player is okay with. If it was not, he would go to the coach and say, hey, I just can't do it. Now, that being said, I would have to assume that, you know, player, manager, doctor, whoever, takes into account that they're asking them to do this in a very short window and would never ask them to do this on a consistent basis. Now, what I do find interesting is that there's still people out there that want to argue about rest and its importance, especially in pitching and throwing, when we saw what we did see. And that was obviously there is a limit that these guys can be pushed to. Corey Kluber tried to do something that is really an amazing feat, and that was to pitch back-to-back three-day rest type situations. I don't think you have to look any further than his outings to see that although he was successful in the second one and obviously not in the third, the quality of his pitching obviously diminished. I mean, this is a high strikeout guy that only had three strikeouts in his second start and had zero in his third start. So right then and there, in the way that the starts went, it should tell you the amount of taxation that doing something like that without rest takes on your body. Aroldis Chapman, same thing. They asked him to do some things that, A, he typically doesn't do. So that's always a concern whenever we put kids out there. And that example will be when we put kids out there and they haven't thrown a whole lot, and then all of a sudden we stick them out there and we want them to go, go, go until they just fall apart or can't do it anymore or until we're prepared to take them out or whatever it is. You know, Aroldis Chapman obviously is a physical specimen, and even he buckled under the taxation of stretching him to a point that was probably a little too thin. I'm sure everybody with a World Series title right now is more than prepared to go on and say absolutely it was the right thing to do. I'm not telling you it wasn't. What I am saying, though, is that these are the greatest athletes in the world, some of the most conditioned athletes in the world, and look at the toll it took on their bodies. So we're back to when I always ask the question on the weekends, why we allow a 10-year-old to throw back-to-back days with no rest. Sometimes, depending on when the games are, and that's always my favorite, sometimes within a 24-hour period. Typically, it is in a 24-hour period. So that's where a lot of this comes from. And I just find it amazing that it didn't take very long for me to get some notes that say, see, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, Aroldis Chapman pitched 8 outs yesterday, and now here he is back pitching again. Corey Kluber's throwing on 3 days rest. And again, I preface this all by saying these guys are playing the highest level. They're the biggest, strongest, most conditioned athletes in the world. And while they are doing it for reasons that they will want to defend, and that's fine, you're not going to see it done 99% of the time. And there's a reason for that. If what they did over the course of this last 7 days, okay, if what they did was okay, then why don't they do it all the time? That's what I'll ask you. And if you can come up with a great explanation for me, I'd be happy to hear it. But they don't do it. And I think that if they had their ways that they could do it over, maybe, they obviously would do some things different as far as maybe with the way they constructed their bullpens or things like that. I would say my guess is with the Cubs is with Rondon not throwing very much, maybe his injury kind of crept back up during the World Series because it makes no sense why he wasn't used more. You know, I just, again, if it is strictly, and I'm okay with it, if it was strictly this is our best option to win and we're here to win, then okay, well, I got you. I mean, this is, after all, you guys are getting paid to do this. I mean, nobody questions the things that we do. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do when it's your job. And let's make no mistake about it. While it is a game, it is their job as well, and they are paid handsomely to go out there. And sometimes they are paid to take these risks that come with it. It's not a risk that needs to be taken when somebody's 10 years old. And I think that's the common sense factor in this that I would hope would be there. Now, sometimes it is, and sometimes it is not. But in this instance, obviously that stuff's out the window when you're trying to win. But for a 10-year-old and you're trying to win a trophy or trying to win whatever it is, to take a chance to compromise someone's health is probably never a good idea. And that's the only thing that we try to say on here is that think about the situation, think about what's to gain, think about what's to lose, and then go from there. Again, I think all things in moderation are fine, but when we push and when we take things to a level they don't need to be, is I think when we all get into trouble, no matter what it is, and I'm not just talking about baseball or youth sports, I'm talking about anything in life, right? So it tends to bring us to the age-old question of, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and that is, I don't know that we know. Okay, that's it. I love how Darren Hendrickson always says that if anybody tells you they know for sure, turn around and run because they're lying. They don't know. There is no way. I'm of the belief that, you know, pitchers' arms just wear out like cars, and some of them have nicer cars than others, but sooner or later you're going to have issues. It's just a matter of when, and it's a matter of what kind of issue you have. And that's what I believe. I mean, I've had a very prominent doctor in town here tell me that you can do all the studies you want, and he appreciates them and obviously is obliged to check them out and not obliged, obligated, sorry, wrong word. But the reality of it is, you know, he'll tell you that he's never going to be convinced that it's just a simple issue of it's not a natural act. Some people out there are trying to tell you how it's a natural act. It's not. It's just not. Throwing a ball overhand is not a natural movement for that type of torque and repetitive nature. It's just not. It's not a natural movement. You know, so that's it on the pitching. I want to talk a little bit about the play. We saw some interesting things that went down, and I'm curious, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on them. The John Lester thing I thought was an interesting deal. In the fact that here's a guy that's arguably a Cy Young candidate this year in baseball, which I personally think he's going to win, a Cy Young candidate that can, I mean, basically from the mound throw 2-3 pitches as quality as anybody in the league, throw it to a spot the size of a dime, but yet refuses to want to throw the ball to a base. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen guys struggle to with accuracy on throws and things like that. I don't know that I've ever seen a guy that could pitch that well that refused to throw the ball to a base. It's just the oddest thing I've ever seen. What's weird about this, though, is I want to talk a little bit about the base running from Cleveland. They had guys thrown out, and they not only did they have guys thrown out trying to steal off of him when they were literally Ted Leeds twice the length that other people would have, they weren't aggressive enough, in my opinion. And I think at the end of the day, sometimes you have to play the game the right way. And I thought John Smoltz did a great job on the play-by-play of saying that, in his opinion, the only thing he could come up with was maybe because they were so far off the bag, they didn't get great jumps, you know, because they were uncomfortable. What I found interesting was, as a, you know, and I think this is pretty standard, so I'll say this, and you may teach it differently, but, you know, when you have a left-hander on the mound, if you are taking your lead, unless you're stealing, when he picks his front foot up, you take a little half step back to the bag in case he throws over, because it's hard to tell if he's going to or not if you haven't read a great move, okay? And then as soon as he goes home, then you bounce into your secondary lead. Of course, if you're stealing on first movement, as soon as he moves the front foot, off we go, right? What I thought was interesting was here was a guy that refused to throw the ball over there under any circumstances, but yet guys were still, I mean, they were so far off the bag, but they were still going back like they had been taught on a normal lead. So I asked the question, if you were going to do this, what are you doing stepping back towards the bag? I'll never understand it. I guess, you know, you don't want to get backpicked by the catcher, which is a reality. I get that. But if you're going to get that far off and you're actually to not get backpicked, you actually got to go back to the bag. That's kind of counterproductive to me. If you're going to get off the bag, then just go. But commit to it and go. But it seemed to me like you could see it in those guys' eyes. And, you know, you could see it that they were uncomfortable. I don't know. It was just the weirdest thing I'd ever seen. And I just thought it was odd. I thought, you know, Cleveland should have took advantage of it a little bit more and maybe bunted directly at Lester. And I think they may have had more of a chance. But at the end of the day, those are things that play in the game. Madden asking Baez to bunt with two strikes and a runner on third after he had not tried to bunt at all in the at-bat, I thought was an interesting call. Bunting, I think, at times has become a lost art. I don't know if you, as a youth coach, spend much time working on bunting. It is a good way sometimes to move a runner over if you feel like it's necessary. It is a great way sometimes to get a runner home from third with less than two outs in a squeeze or a safety squeeze situation. I've always had my opinions about bunting, and I've had a lot of people tell me that they completely disagree with this. I'm not even saying I'm right. It was my choice as a youth coach to not bunt very much, hardly ever, really. I didn't do it because I felt like my task was to teach these kids how to hit because it's so hard. One of the reasons that I've always said that I felt like young kids struggled hitting is because they lacked confidence. It was such a failure-driven thing. Sometimes they would get caught up in trying to take walks just so they could get on base versus striking out. I wanted my kids to go up there and get aggressive and take their hacks and kind of build that way. It was a personal thing. I'm not saying it's right. I've talked to many different people about it. There's a lot of guys that'll tell you there's no doubt in their mind that bunting is a big part of the game. It's a part of the game that needs to be taught. It's not taught as much anymore because of people like myself, maybe at the youth level, and it's not acted on enough. And it's not something that even when they get to high school, they've done enough of at the youth level so that the high school coach can be comfortable with them doing it. That would be the setting that I think is where it should really start getting taught. But for me, I always felt like it was my job to let them hit and learn how to hit because it's such a hard thing to do. But bunting is obviously a big deal in certain situations because it seems like the only time that we call upon it is in important situations, right? And then when they can't do it, everybody wants to focus in on why they can't do it. So, my guess would be is that we want to look at that and try to figure out what's going on there. But we saw some great defensive plays in this series. We got some of the youngest guys in the game that are playing the game at an unbelievably high level. I think Addison Russell has shown how important his defense is to the Chicago Cubs. Javier Baez was an interesting player throughout the playoffs. It's a little bit of a coming out party for him. He did have some struggles here and there offensively, but on the whole had some big offensive opportunities for the Cubs. He made some unbelievable defensive plays that just had everybody oohing and on. Now, strangely enough, he made a couple of odd errors, in my opinion, in Game 7. But for the most part, it was kind of his coming out party. I think that if we were to use him as an example of where you're at in your defensive part of your game, he had played so well. It was almost like he felt like he could do no wrong. And the first error he made was just a simple ground ball where he decided to just flip it over instead of using his feet, which I think is a common mistake for everybody, but it's just amazing that a guy that had played that well defensively chose to do that, and then of course they make the error. Just some unbelievable stuff going on. The shortstop on the Cleveland Indians side played very well, made some nice plays in Lindor. He's just such a great young talent. Chris Bryant, one of the up and coming guys in the game. I hope everybody got a chance to see in slow-mo the home run that he hit in Game 6. I thought it was an interesting approach that the Cubs took, and this is always a great learning thing. I mean, the Cubs really struggled with breaking pitches at the end of the year and into the playoffs. It seemed like the guys that really kept the ball down and had it diving in through the bottom of the strike zone really gave them a little bit of fits. What it was apparent to me is that they got together as a group and said, okay, let's take a look at what we're struggling with. One of those things they were struggling with was those pitches. It was evident to me as a baseball guy that somebody somewhere got with all these guys and said, let's go up there and start hunting that pitch. Because if you look at some of the good swings they put on Tomlin in that game, it was amazing to me the bat angle. I mean, Chris Bryant, I would love to have had a blast motion sensor or Zep or whatever. I would love to have had that on him to see what his bat angle was on that pitch. I mean, it had to be. I mean, his hands were so far above that barrel that it was amazing to me, and it was a great piece of hitting. But those are the types of things that where you have to make adjustments and you have to do things, and some of these guys just went up there and executed a great game plan. So, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of pulling for Cleveland. I'm a big Cardinal fan, and I think as a Cardinal fan, we kind of always relished in the fact that We kind of had something over on our friends of the North there in Chicago. I'm sure we're going to hear it from them, and we deserve it because we've given them enough grief over the years. So happy to take it back as you guys now sit atop top of baseball, and good for you and good for your fans that have waited all these years to experience what is an unbelievable scene today in Chicago, by the way. Congratulations. But as far as the play that went on, I thought there was some great stuff. I thought there were some things that obviously give me caution because I think that those are the types of things that sometimes coaches that aren't as educated see and think that they're just okay to do. So I just wanted to lay a little caution out there based on the fact that it hasn't been 48 hours and I've already gotten some emails saying, I thought you said you can't do this and look, they're doing it. The fact that I have to answer an email like that will tell you that sometimes we have to put things in perspective. So just thought it was an interesting take on something that is definitely out there for all to see. And sometimes, like I said, we as volunteer coaches and as people that are genuinely trying to do the right thing, I think the majority of the time, you know, that's how we get educated, by seeing some of the guys at the highest level do things. Make sure that you take the time, if you're serious about this, to check into some of the things we talk about on here with some of these unbelievable people that have dedicated themselves to youth sports, youth baseball, how it should be for a kid versus, obviously, guys playing at the highest level in the most developed bodies that you're going to find. So for all my Cub fans out there that are so excited, congratulations. For everybody else, maybe your team, maybe that'll be you guys next year. I'm sure you hope it is. And the one thing I will say is that I always think it's great when kids are entertained by the game, because it definitely helps us with their interest levels. Watching those games, I know my kids watched them, they enjoyed them. Definitely, without a question, the weather where we're at has been unseasonably warm, and it's got kids here wanting to go outside, wanting to do things. So anytime we can get them watching great baseball, I think it's a plus for all of us in what we're trying to do. So those were just a couple of the things that I picked up from the World Series and some people had reached out to me and asked me about, so I just thought I'd address them. I just think that it's always good to talk about these things, put them out on the table. And again, would love to hear your comments. Make sure you email me info@youthbaseballtalk.com. Happy to take those emails and discuss them with you at any time. We're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to hear from our good friend Domingo Ayala, Justin Stone with EliteBaseball.tv, and of course, Rick Strickland with St. Louis Pirates Nation. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Attention coaches, parents, and student athletes. Here at Youth Baseball Talk, one of the most common emails we receive from mom and dad are about the college recruitment and selection process. Far too often, these emails do not have happy endings. Let me tell you about our friend Mark Lineweaver in Perfect Placement. Perfect Placement identifies and helps you with important decision-making factors which are way too often overlooked in the college recruitment process, such as, is it the right student body size for you? Is it a comfortable proximity from your home? Do they offer your desired field of study? How about extracurricular activities that interest you? And of course, the proper level of competition for your skill set. Once they've identified these factors, they will contact those colleges and speak directly to the coaching staff in an effort to help you. To learn more about Perfect Placement, simply check out their website, perfectplacement.com. That's placement with a Y. To contact them, you can email them at info@perfectplacement.com. Remember, that's placement with a Y. Call 310-921-8669 for more information. That's 310-921-8669. Perfect Placement, specializing in assisting your student athlete.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Youth Baseball Talk, brought to you by The Rope Trainer. As John Smoltz says, everyone should have one, from big leaguers to little leaguers. Make sure you check out theropetrainer.com. Save those bullets for the game, boys. Each and every week, we're very blessed to have Domingo Ayala and his theory of baseball. I can't tell you how much excitement it brings me to get the comments back from the kids and the people that really enjoy Domingo. Love his lighthearted theory of baseball, but sometimes there's a great message in there as well. So let's make sure that we're always paying attention to what Domingo has to say and laughing with him, enjoying the game. And of course, I cannot thank the pitch hitter enough for bringing Domingo to you each and every week. You definitely want to check out thepitchhitter.com. It's a great training device, as I've said 1,000 times over on the show. One of my worst experiences as a coach all the years that I've done it is, I cringe, and I understand it, but I cringe when mom, dad, uncle, friend, whoever, other parents, you know, yell at kids to just throw strikes. I mean, I want to stand up and say they're trying to throw strikes. If you really want to help your youngster throw strikes and feel more comfortable in the box, check out thepitchhitter.com. It's just the device for you. It's very easy to use, very portable so that you can use it anywhere, anytime. So without waiting any longer, thanks to the Pitch Hitter, let's go to Domingo and his theory of baseball. Domingo, take it away.
Hi, Jim. How you're doing? Thanks for having me on today, and thank you to the Pitch Hitter for making this possible. Today, I want to talk about a certain type of player, the 5 o'clock hitter. The 5 o'clock hitter, the guy that can hit in batting practice, but he can't hit in the game. They show up to the 5 o'clock BP, hit a bunch of home run, hit the ball 500 feet. You're watching them, and you think they're the best hitter on the team. But then at 7 o'clock, when the game starts, they can't hit. They bat about a buck 50, can't hit a home run. It's just confusing. Sometimes the 5 o'clock hitter make excuse about why they don't hit in the game. Like, oh, Mr. Coach screwing up with my swing. Or, my contact are dry, I can't see the pitch. Come on, man. It's because it's a lot easier to hit a 40 mile per hour loopy batting practice pitch than it is to face a pitcher throwing 95 mile per hour with a good off speed. So quit complaining when you're not in the lineup. If we face a guy throwing 40 mile per hour, we push you in. But if you want to face a real pitcher, learn to hit 90 miles per hour, not just batting practice. And if you don't learn to hit a real pitcher, you're not going to be playing for long. You might even become the 9 o'clock hitter, because that's the time your slow pitch softball game starts. Well, that's what I got for today, Jim. Thanks for having me on. And don't forget to check out the Pitch Hitter, unless you just want to be a semi-pro.
Great stuff as always there, Domingo. Really appreciate it. And once again, thank you to the Pitch Hitter, thepitchhitter.com. Be big time. Don't be semi-pro. That's what they say. I love it. It's just great stuff. Special thanks to EliteBaseball.tv as they bring us Justin Stone each and every week. His great, I call it an information website, because if you're a coach, a player, or a trainer, EliteBaseball.tv is a phenomenal product. It can help you. I enjoyed using it for my kids. I felt like everything he was teaching was easy for me as a coach and a parent to use for my children. So make sure you check them out, EliteBaseball.tv. And let's hear from Justin Stone. Take it away, bud.
Thanks, Jim. This is Justin Stone with EliteBaseball.tv coming to you with the tip of the week. And a number of times we've talked about the feeling of keeping in-step pressure into the ground during our forward advance of the stride. And this is truly the definition of staying back. You hear that coached a lot from the youth age all the way up into big league baseball, the ability to maintain body control while one foot is in the air during the stride. And that's very difficult to do. It takes dynamic athleticism to be able, and strength, to be able to keep that pressure into the ground, control the body in a smooth pace out to foot down before we begin the rotational phase of the swing. However, this is one of those coaching cues that gets used so often, the adverse can be affected. What I mean by that is you get players that often get stuck back. So today's theme in our approach is I want to talk about some coaching cues that sometimes go against what is really happening in the swing. And in reality, we're trying to trick the body into doing what we know is mechanically correct. And this happens often for me when I get players that are stuck back in an overload position. This usually happens when players drift backwards in the load and the knee gets over the ankle. Oftentimes now, you'll see players reach with the stride foot and then wait for their body to shift back to center. There are big league players that have used this style with success. However, most amateur athletes are not athletic enough, nor do they have correct timing enough to be able to accomplish this extra step during the forward move. So when we want players to get into their forward advance, we always know that the knee immediately gets inside the ankle. But what if we have a player that gets stuck back and spins through rotation? We know that there has to be some weight and energy transfer through my lower half, bringing the kinetic energy through the body to get full power output in the swing. So when I have players that do this, I'm okay with them first getting out onto their front side, forward of 50-50 weight distribution at foot down, just to get the feeling of my backside releasing into the baseball. Now you would say, Justin, I know we're not supposed to be 60-40 at foot down. We're not supposed to be 70-30 at foot down. But it's such a different feeling for a hitter that it's okay sometimes. And I'm not just using this lower half as an example. You can use upper body, hands position. The exaggeration feel in a drill is okay, knowing that the thing we're getting the hitter to do, of, in this case, landing 70-30 on their front leg, is not correct. But what it's doing is creating a compensating feel, which will eventually meet the player in the middle. And that's our ultimate goal and objective, tricking the player's body into doing what we know is mechanically correct, but sometimes having to over-exaggerate it to a fault to accomplish that feeling. So I do this in our feet together step and hit drills, usually the first one I go for, when players are getting stuck back too much, and I'll have them advance out and say, it's okay for you to land heavy on your stride foot right now. And what I'll do when I do the video analysis, sometimes on my phone, sometimes on a computer, is show them that their backside is now releasing completely into the ball, oftentimes coming off the ground a little further, or even sliding forward some. Now, that much slippage of the backside in a game, I would not consider correct. But getting the players the feel of a backside completely releasing into the ball and doing that first from the lower body is an important feel thing. And oftentimes you're going to have to exaggerate that feel for them to get it right. What I always say, and this is an important coaching cue, it's going to come from today's segment. It's really easy for me to get a player reeled in from doing something too much. You will kick, push, and prod them forever to get them to do something a little extra. That is the hard part. So if you can get them to exaggerate something early on, it's real easy to back them off that exaggerated feeling. But to consistently ask a player, no, I need more than that. Keep going. I need more. Is not going to get you to where you need to go. So exaggerate the heck out of it. Whatever we're asking them to do, if they're not doing it correctly, do it more. And then we're going to back off from that feeling and end up meeting that player in the middle. So the lower half is the easiest example for that, but you'll see it with hands. Guys aren't holding their scap load long enough. You'll see their shoulders collapse uphill early. You'll see a player that will ask them to get on top of the ball more. We know that isn't correct, that the swing needs to be on plane and slightly uphill to lift the ball and get the right trajectory. However, telling them to get on top of the ball in that situation is just an exaggerated thought in order to maintain the upper body scap load. If you go back to elitebaseball.tv, you'll see a very good hitting segment with Andy Haynes, who is the Cubs minor league hitting coordinator, and myself discussing that exact thing, that sometimes feel is different than real. And that's Andy's quote, not mine. But it is that exaggerated feeling that we will sometimes say to a hitter, knowing that it is not mechanically correct, but to get them to feel the action of compensation that we're trying to get them to do to meet us in the middle for that correct mechanical approach. So it's okay sometimes, and I look over my shoulder too as a hitting coach, like, man, I hope nobody heard me just say that because that's against everything I truly believe. But in that case, that's what that hitter needed right then. And that's what it's all about, guys, is getting the hitter correct. This is Justin Stone from elitebaseball.tv, and until next week, we'll see you on the field.
Good stuff as always from my man Justin Stone. Make sure to check him out, elitebaseball.tv. It's definitely worth your while. Really privileged each and every week to bring this guy. I learned so much from being able to be around him on a consistent basis and watch him work with my own son. It's been a blessing for me to have him around, and my son is definitely becoming a player that he wants to be thanks to this man and everything he's done for him. So that's my personal thanks to Rick Strickland over with St. Louis Pirates. But for all of you, let's hear from Rick Strickland and his Blast Motion Tip of the Week. Rick, take it away.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show again this week. Wanted to talk a little bit this week about the World Series that just wrapped up. I know we're in the heart of Cardinal Nation, and I know it might have been painful for a lot of those fans out there to watch the Cubs win the World Series, and I have to admit though that over the years I had to keep my Cub enthusiasm under wrap. I think it's kind of surprising when people find out that I am a Cub fan, and they have to explain that to you because it's kind of an interesting dilemma with me that I'm going to talk about a little bit this week. And I think it's important that young baseball players actually listen to this. My kids, I have three kids, and you know, I think they think that they need to be Cub fans because I'm a Cub fan. And, you know, I'd be honest with you, I would prefer that they choose their allegiance, team allegiances, based upon basically the same way I chose mine. I was born and raised in Chicago as a kid, and my introduction to the game of baseball was by my uncles at the age of six, and basically I was told, they were teenagers at that time, that I had to stay in the house and watch the Cubs play in the daytime and then turn around in the evening time and watch the White Sox at night, and then be able to give them game-by-game recap or any-by-any recap of what happened between the two teams. And because they were teenagers, they could be bullies a little bit, and if I didn't get it right, there could be consequences for not giving it right. But really, as a young player, without really parental involvement, I gained a great passion for the game. So I can't tell you how many games as a young player I actually watched, as a young person, how many games I actually watched. But I can tell you, they were years that went by where I never missed a Cub game on WGN and probably never missed a White Sox game on Channel 44 at that time. Of course, those channels have all changed. And then when I moved to Cardinal Nation at the age of 14, we were lucky because we did still have a WGN in the household in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and I was able to catch all my Cub games and took a lot of abuse and things over the years. But one of the things that the people asking me, why are you a Cub fan? I think it's part of my DNA, and hopefully my kids will choose to root for their local team, because what I am as a baseball coach, as a baseball player, came from the daytime and watching those games day by day, hours by hours, on the TV, trying to go out and mimic my favorite player. In practicing things that I had saw on TV. Now, granted, growing up a Cub and some of those lousy teams I watched play, I was learning a lot of bad habits, but just really kind of learning what baseball was all about. Today's you tend to not watch games on TV, that is. We have mobile apps, and so the attention span and watching the games is very, very brief, but it was a pleasure being able to learn how to play by watching my favorite players from multiple teams play and learn the game that way, and listening to the announcers and listening to the special guests that came on those broadcasts and talked about. So, the Cubs won, and, I'm extremely ecstatic for that. But really, it's a culmination of who I am today as a baseball person that's involved heavily in youth development and baseball. So my advice to kids out there that are aspiring to be baseball players is, play as much baseball as your body will allow you to play, but also watch as much as you can watch. There's a lot of learning things that you can take away from watching other players play and also watching some major league guys play. So I just wanted to wrap that up this week, Jim, with that on the show. I appreciate it every week that you give me an opportunity to talk to the folks out there. If you want any information about us, you can reach us at sandlotelite.com or very soon, rickstricklandbaseball.com, which will be our online coaching community. Thanks, Jim. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Great stuff as always, my man. Really appreciate it. And nobody thanks you more for the time you spend with their son than I do. So thank you very much. Great stuff as always from our contributors. We are so blessed to have them each and every week. I really enjoyed my conversation with you guys today at the beginning of the show. When the World Series is on, I'm just a fan like everybody else. My team was not a part of it this year. I will say that for the past World Series, basically, that didn't involve the Cardinals, I watched sparingly. I was really, really into this World Series. And I felt like it was an interesting situation, being the whole Chicago-St. Louis dynamic, not wanting them to win. I don't know why. It's probably not a great thing. But the truth of the matter is, they were the best team in baseball this year. They deserved to win. I enjoyed watching it with my kids. I thought it was exciting. The last game gave us everything we wanted more. Congratulations to them, and a new baseball season will be upon us. As you move into this offseason of baseball and they have their hot stove league, remember that these guys are the greatest players on the planet, and they are taking care of their bodies. They're giving themselves a little bit of rest, and then they'll be right back at it. Make sure that that's what you're teaching your child as well. They need a break, okay? But then when that break's over, it's time to get to work. There's nothing wrong with work. Don't let anybody ever tell you there's anything wrong with working in the off season. Get to work. Do it the right way. check in with some of these guys and learn about maybe what you should be doing. I understand that you may not live in Chicago where Justin Stone is. You may not live in St. Louis where Rick Strickland is. Okay, I get all that. But there are quality programs. There's a bunch of quality programs here in St. Louis. There's quality programs in Chicago besides Justin. They know that. Okay, they want you guys to go out and research and find these people that can help you if you're not sure what your son should be doing. That's my request to you, is just do your homework wherever you're at. It's become such a big thing. I guarantee you, if you do just a little bit of research, you will find what your son should and should not be doing, or daughter, in the off season. But that's the time we get better. That's the time we go to work. But don't forget, give them a little bit of rest, okay? Let them be a kid. That's all we ask. I guarantee you there's a few of these players that are pretty beat, and they're going to need a little break. So if you don't think your son or daughter doesn't need a little bit of a break, okay, you better wake up and smell the coffee, all right? Give them a little break. For Youth Baseball Talk, my producer, Brian, who definitely puts the show together each and every week for me. I couldn't live without him. I want to say have a great weekend. Enjoy this last baseball hurrah. You'll keep seeing highlights here for a while, but then we're going to hit that off season, and this is where the grind starts. So to all my players out there that are listening, I tell you that if you don't want to get outworked, don't get outworked in the winter for sure, because this is where you get better. For Youth Baseball Talk, I'm Jim Cromer, and I will see you next week.
Tune in next week for another edition of Youth Baseball Talk. Subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to the show. Find us online at youthbaseballtalk.com, facebook.com/youthbaseballtalk, or on Twitter at @podcastbaseball. Plus, check out all of our podcasts at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.